HockeyStrengthConditioning.com presents the Hockey Strength Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthConditioning.com, the only hockey training resource you will ever need. My name is Anthony Rana, and you can reach me at HockeyStrength@gmail.com. All right, so this is the second episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast, and we're going to be doing these every month as a compliment to all the great content we have at HockeyStrengthConditioning.com. Now, if you're not familiar with the site, it's a partnership with NHL strength coaches Sean Skane and Mike Potenza, along with USA Hockey's Daryl Nelson, who actually is a guest on today's show, and Kevin Neal from Endeavor Sports Performance. We have some great contributors on there as well, like Clarkson's Jamie Rodriguez, UMass Lowell's Devin McConnell, former BU player and now pro player Kevin Schaefer, Anthony Donskov from Donskov Strength and Conditioning, and Maria Mountain from Revolution Sport Conditioning in London, Ontario, among others. So there's a lot of great videos, articles, programs that go up every week, along with periodic webinars and monthly youth programs. We also have a very active forum that all of our coaches participate in. So if you train hockey players, you have to check out this site. Now there's a trial offer and it's 7 days for just $1. So you can go check out the site, all the videos, articles, forum threads, programs, and more. And if you don't love a site, just cancel your membership. You're out a buck. We're pretty sure that you're going to be impressed with all the great content. And if you want to continue, it's just $9.95 a month. That's an incredible bargain if you train hockey players, or even if you're a hockey player yourself and you want to get some advice from some of the best hockey strength coaches in the world. All right, so on today's show, I speak with Daryl Nelson. Daryl is, like I said before, a partner at HockeyStrengthConditioning.com. He's also the strength and conditioning coach with USA Hockey National Team Development Program. So I spoke to Coach Nelson about changing up rep schemes, clusters, quarter sprints, and his back from holiday break program. So lots of great info coming up from Coach Nelson. So let's get him on the phone. All right, I am here with Daryl Nelson. And Daryl, besides being one of the partners at HockeyStrengthConditioning.com and one of our most frequent contributors before he became a partner, Daryl is also the strength and conditioning coach with USA Hockey National Team Development Program. He's been there since the 2000-2001 season. The team is, there's definitely been some great success. USA Hockey, especially the U17 and U18s have really kind of come into their own and won some gold medals in the World Challenges and the World Championships. So definitely some great stuff there. And Daryl also worked at International Performance Institute in Bradenton, as well as Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning. So Daryl, thanks for coming on today.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Absolutely. Always enjoy a lot of your content on strength, HockeyStrengthConditioning.com. And I wanted to, we're going to talk about some of that content. But, I always wanted to ask you, it's funny that I never asked you before, but, your job seems kind of interesting, and I'm always wondering, for example, Coach Boyle, he works with some of the lady hockey players, and it's only kind of on a basis where basically, he'll go in there once in a while and train them, and it's not really a full-time gig. Can you just talk a little bit about your role with USA Hockey and for example, is it full-time, and you living with these guys? Are they there year-round? Just give us an overview of basically what you're doing there.
Yeah. So what I'm doing here is it's full-time, and I guess the easiest way to explain the structure of our program is that I would equate it to, it's probably the most similar to like junior hockey. So the players are from all over the country, but they move to Ann Arbor and they live with a host family. They have a billet family. So they live here. They don't live here year round. They live here for the academic school year. So from Labor Day until when school gets out in mid-June, they'll be here, for their under 17 year. And then they'll have summer vacation from school. They'll go back and live with their parents wherever they're from, Minnesota or Michigan or Massachusetts or California or Texas or wherever. And then they'll come back. They're under 18 years, so they'll come back again on Labor Day weekend before school starts and stay through their under 18 season until they graduate from high school. So we have them for almost 2 years. I don't know what it actually is, like 19 months or something like that. So the players live here. They practice together as a team. It's a standing national team. So they practice together as a team every day. They compete together as a team every weekend. You know, they do off-ice workouts with me every week. I see them, you know, 5 times a week, 6 days a week, whatever. Even if they don't have weight training with me, I still see them every day.
Good stuff. Now, it's been pretty cool because at HockeyStrengthAdition.com, we've been able to kind of get a glimpse into some of the stuff that you guys are doing there. So that's really, especially with a lot of the videos that you're doing. And obviously, you're putting up a lot of articles and videos, so that's kind of cool. So I wanted to talk about one of those articles, or really three of the articles. But first one is... my favorite set and repetition schemes. And you were talking about the fact that the number of repetitions performed in a set is the thing lifters will adapt to the fastest. Therefore, this is the variable that should be changed most. I've actually never heard that before. And I just wanted you to kind of elaborate on that a little bit and then talk to us about how you might change the frequency, how you change that variable.
Yeah, so obviously it is the thing I think that players adapt to the most rapidly. You know, a change in the number of sets you do, you know, if you're doing one set or two sets of, say, higher repetitions, like 8 or 9 or 10 reps, I don't think that doesn't make a guy change that much and have to adapt that much to that. You know, going from 1 set of 10 to 2 sets of 10 the following week isn't going to make somebody adapt or, you know, cause them to be really sore. Where I think if you go from doing 9 reps down to 3 reps, you know, that change in the loading and the intensity of the load is going to cause more soreness, or vice versa, going from 3 or 4 reps up to 8 or 9 reps, you know, that's going to cause more of a change in them physiologically than just changing, you know, the number of sets that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I really don't change lifting tempo that much. I always, for the most part, do what I call a normal tempo, which is going to be 1 or 2 seconds lowering the weight and then lifting the weight forcefully. But the reps, you know, change a lot every three weeks, you know, and the same is true with, I like to have a lot of variety and change exercises regularly, you know, every 3 or 4 weeks, but, you know, you still kind of always have your staple lifts like cleans or snatches or some kind of squat, where, you know, I don't necessarily change that as drastically as changing the number of repetitions that we do. So I think that's, you know, that's just the one that causes the biggest, you know, changing the amount of weight you're lifting, so the number of reps that you're using is going to get the greatest neuromuscular response metabolic response, depending on how many reps you're doing.
Good stuff. Talk to me about why you do not, you're not big on, you know, really changing the tempo. What's that? What would be the reason behind that?
I don't change tempo very much because I don't think it's something that guys, get bored with or adapt to that fast. You know, like once in a while, like maybe one time during the season, I'll do like, you know, slow chin ups where they got to lower themselves for like 5 or 6 count and then pull themselves up. But, you know, very rarely do I ever actually change lifting tempo, because I don't think that guys adapt to it that quickly.
All right, good stuff. In the article, you were talking about some different types of, you know, set and repetition schemes, but I really just want to go over the clusters. Can you just kind of give us an overview of what clusters are for people that don't know, you know, what they are, and give us an example, and then talk about what is it about clusters that you like?
So when I do clusters, what I'm saying there is that the lifter is doing a rest between each repetition. So if they're doing a set of 3 reps, they're going to have a rest after the first rep and then a rest after the second rep. And then, you know, after the third rep, the termination of the set. So why I use that and why I like to do that is because I think, you really place a greater demand on their neuromuscular system. I think you recruit more motor units when you use clusters, because by doing the rest after every repetition, they're not building up elastic energy, or, you know, they're not storing kinetic energy, however you want to, mm-hmm. you want to phrase it. You know, like you think about when you do like, you know, dumbbell incline presses or chin-ups, a lot of times the first rep is the hardest because you haven't had an eccentric lowering going into that first repetition. And then after you do the first and the second rep, it's easier because you have that elastic energy from lowering the weight down. So if you do something in a cluster style, you know, you're eliminating that stored elastic energy every time. So usually when I do clusters in my workouts, I usually put a 10-second rest between each rep because I think that's long enough for all that elastic energy to dissipate. You know, some people do longer. A lot of people do 20 or 30 or 40 seconds. I think that's fine, but for what I'm doing cluster for, I think that's overkill. I don't think guys need to wait that long to get what I want them to get from it.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. I was thinking also now, like you were saying in the article, that barbell lifts are probably, it's more practical with the barbell lifts, like Olympic lifts, pressing and squatting, because basically, are you re-racking? Like if I'm doing benching or if I'm doing some Olympic lift, obviously Olympic lifts are a little easier to kind of, re-rack. You might be pulling from the floor, but a squatting exercise, you're just going to re-rack and then wait that 10 and go again?
Yeah, so on squatting and on whatever bench press or incline bench or anything like that, yeah, they're going to rack the weight every time. For Olympic lifts, I'd have them put we use technique blocks. We don't lift off the floor. You know, we do our Olympic lifts from a hang position. So on the cluster, they would put the weight back down on a technique box.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, you wrote recently, your latest article on the site was the hot return from holiday break workout. Pretty simple. I'm just going to go over it really quick for everybody. For day one, you had a barbell snatch, and then you went to barbell reverse lunges barefoot, and you paired that with dumbbell rows. And then you did one-arm dumbbell bench tricep with TRX row, curl, and standing Ws. And then day two, you had cleans by themselves, and then barefoot farmer carry, lateral squats paired with pull-up, and then a high one-arm dumbbell incline tricep with barefoot one-leg SLDLs and peanut crunches. Good stuff. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Talk to me about why you like this kind of coming back from the break. And number two is, you did those barbell reverse lunges. You wrote barefoot, but obviously, are you doing the snatches barefoot? I would assume you're not doing snatches, taking the shoes off and then going into the next set, unless you are.
Yeah, no, all my squatting and deadlifting exercises, we do everything barefoot. Olympic lifting and running and jumping, I don't make the guys do that barefoot, but some of the players do it barefoot. We got three or four guys that wear the Vibram five-finger shoes for everything that they do. They never do use anything else. And there are a couple of guys that just go completely barefoot, not even socks, and they'll do cleans and snatches that way. And some guys wear the regular Nike cross trainers that we get as team issue. So for Olympic lifting, I kind of let the guys choose what they want to do. For all the squatting, I make them take their shoes off. That workout I made for returning from holiday break, one thing that was great about it was that it was really similar to the phase that we were doing before we guys went into their holiday break. So when they had that time off that, had about a week off, there was no big changes for them when they came back and started working out again, which I think coming out of a layoff is good for, the amount of muscle soreness that they would feel. During the season and especially coming out of a break, the split squats and reverse lunges I like a lot more than, I really don't do forward lunges very much in the season because I think they cause a lot more soreness, groin and adductor soreness. So usually in season, I only will do reverse lunges.
I want to kind of go over to conditioning right now because, I know you have a unique situation. Like you said, it's almost like being on a junior team. I know the guys are skating all the time. And I do want to talk about your article that you, the program that you put on the site, Quarter Sprints. But, the Strength Coach Podcast, we've had a lot of different guys on. There's a lot of talk right now about conditioning and, different things, new ideas in conditioning. And I wanted to get your take on, talk to us about how you condition USA hockey team, you know, what is your preferred method? You know, talk to us about, obviously your situation's a little bit different again, because there, you know, a certain amount of, I'm assuming you don't have any restrictions on how much time you guys can spend, but, you know, talk to us about your preferred methods of conditioning right now.
Yeah, no, I really don't face any restrictions time-wise. Like I say, I get the guys, you know, every week, two or three workouts every week, and you know, our conditioning, you know, obviously they skate a lot, and sometimes the coaches skate specifically for conditioning. They'll skate lines or different, you know, however they, Kirby's or anything like that, however they're running that part of their practice. Usually when we condition, you know, in the fall and the spring, when it's nice outside, I always go outside and run. I like running on the ground better than running inside on the treadmills. And in the wintertime, you know, we're stuck using the treadmills. So, you know, a lot of intervals, the quarter sprints, you know, the longest sprints in there are only, you know, 20, 30, maybe 40 yards long, you know, with lots of changes of direction. And I like to incorporate the change of direction as much as possible, which is one limitation of using treadmills. Obviously, you can't change direction on a treadmill. You know, because I think part of it is just that conditioning for team sports. You know, if you're not changing directions, are you really conditioning yourself to play a team sport? And I don't think that you are. There's more to it, I think, than, you know, heart rates and work-to-rest ratios, things like that. I think part of it is the way that you actually move. So a lot of change of direction, I think, is big. And also, you know, whether I'm doing stuff outside with change of direction or treadmills, you know, the easiest way to do that is to use simple work-to-rest ratios. You know, heart rate monitors are awesome if you have enough heart rate monitors for all your guys, and, you know, you can do your whatever your 40 beats per minute of recovery, and you can individualize your workouts more for each player. You know, I think is awesome. We don't have that many heart rate monitors, so I really don't incorporate that kind of training very much. It would be great if we did. So a lot of, you know, pretty much all interval training, I really don't do any long distance stuff. I know some guys are talking more about, you know, aerobic base is kind of making a comeback. You know, I think in some people's perspective, but I don't do any long distance stuff. To me, the hockey practice and the other workouts we do, they're getting any kind of a quote unquote base they may need. I have used heart rate monitors before and had guys wear them during its strength training sessions. And it's one thing I don't really hear people talk about very much, but guys' heart rates when we're lifting weights, and we were doing sets of 6 reps and 4 reps in this workout that I had guys wearing heart rate monitors. You know, when heart rates are going from 125 to 190. So why do I have to spend 45 minutes doing aerobic conditioning when I'm doing strength training like that two or three or sometimes even 4 times per week?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, especially like you said, with all the practices, you know, which could be an hour, hour and a half sometimes, and sometimes probably, you know, double sessions, et cetera. So yeah, I think, yeah, you know, and it's funny because you just reminded me of Paul Robbins. And if anybody wants to know more about him, they can go to Strength Coach Podcast. I interviewed him like episode 15 or something. And I did spend some time at AP as well and listened to Paul talk a few times. And he talked a lot about aerobic base, but his phase five, I'm pretty sure it's phase five, but exactly what you're talking about, kind of getting outside, doing a lot of different directions and working, you know, all these multi directions, because like you said, in sport, you know, that's the way you're going to condition. I think if you're not prepared for that, especially, you know, for hockey, but you know, there's definitely, you know, you're going all over the place and, you know, kind of, yeah, like change of pace happens a lot, so that's pretty interesting. So but that just reminded me of it, so good stuff there. But awesome. So Daryl, thanks so much for coming on today. It was great to kind of go over some of these articles and get a different perspective on it. We really appreciate all the contributions that you make on the site, so thanks again, and we will get you on again soon.
Absolutely, thank you, Anthony.
All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 2 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks to Coach Nelson for coming on and sharing his insights into hockey strength and conditioning. Don't forget, go to hockeystrengthandconditioning.com and sign up for the trial membership for just $1. 7 days, just $1, and if you love us, it's $9.95 a month. If you train hockey players, you need to check this out. My name is Anthony Rana. Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you next time.